Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Kumaras are telling Lord Narayan that we're ready to go to hell, but we need to remain attached to remembering you and stay your devotees in any situation. Please give us that benediction. Okay, continuing 78.21. Shloka doye smin. Kaivalya narakopi twad bhakti matram kamayamananam asmakam tarirodhitvad shreyam iti swarasya labdham. From the self-evident sense of these two verses, it can be deduced, swarasya labdham. It can be deduced that for us who only desire devotional service to you, even hell is better than impersonal merging, since such merging is contrary to devotional service. Tatam itam. Pritartatvam asmakam atichitram ityahuhu pradur iti. The sages further say that it is most amazing, atichitram, how in this way our lives have become successful. Even though they're contemplating being sent to hell, they're thinking their lives are now perfect. They say this in the verse beginning, pradushkatar, pradushchakarta. Let's find it. 50. Padush chakarta yadidam purutarubam tenesha nirvitimavapur alam dushonaha tasmaidam bhagavate nama idvidhema Yonatmanam dududayo bhagavan pratita. Okay, that's the end of the chapter, so that's the end of the prayer. This idvidema, or nama idvidema, is a very Vedic instruction. You'll see it at the end of Vedic hymns, at the end of the hymn, such expressions. Id is a Vedic interjection. Let's see what Jiva Goswami says about this. Anatmanam. For those who were anatmas, atmanastava ekanta bhakti rahitanam aprakatopi id ittam yapratito si tasmai tubhyam nama idam videmeti. For those who have no realization of the self, anatma, rather who, or meaning who, lack exclusive devotion to you, the self, for them you are unmanifest. Yet now you are being perceived in this manner. Ittam, in this way. It means ittam, in this way. Theoretically, he should be unmanifest to those who are not his devotees. But they are, have to admit, they're seeing him in this way that's undeniable. You're right in front of us. we're seeing you. To him, you, we offer these obeisances. Idam is there in Jiva Goswami. No, actually, the word Idam is in the verse. So these obeisances we offer to you. Commentary. Due to their humility, the Kumara brothers consider themselves still impersonalists and thus disqualified to get the Lord's mercy. As far as they're concerned, they're talking about themselves. Those you remain unmanifest for, persons like ourselves. The Kumaras are aware that the project of merging one's existence into that of the Supreme is contrary to bhakti, the natural function of the soul. The sharing of loving exchanges, which is devotional service, must involve two parties, God and his devotee. Nothing can be shared if their identities are merged. No merging. No devotional service if you merge into the existence of the Supreme. Any questions? No? Yeah.
The devotees pray that in any situation, any position, they are put into the Sarva Krishna. And then what is the reason? Well, the reason is mentioned here. When they go to Brahman, that question is not included in that. Any position, any place they are put, they always want to serve Krishna. They don't mind any place to go.
Yes. But how can you serve Krishna in the Brahmajyoti? You have no apparatus to serve him with. No mind, no ego. There must be an ego. You have to identify yourself as servant. Krishna is master. There has to be that ego identification. When there's no ego to use for identifying, you can't even think of yourself as a servant. What is being doing service? And, there can be unconscious service. But what service does the Brahmajyoti do for Krishna? Not much. He's producing it, but what does it do for him? Nothing. So there's no service in the Brahmajyoti. No capacity to do service, and whatever's there doesn't really do anything for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, devotees don't want to go there. Send us to hell, but not this Brahmajyoti.
Also, they say that even hell is not that it knows the nature. But does it mean that they already had this experience of merging into the existence of the Lord? How can they tell that this is better or worse?
They didn't completely merge. They're still there. There's still four of them. So if there are four of them, they haven't merged into one. They're separate. They still are. So they may be Jivan Mukta. But according to the Mayavadis, a Jivan Mukta is still got karma. He's still living in the material world with karma. His Prarabdha karma is keeping him in the material world, even though he's liberated. That's not our idea. That's what the Mayavadis say. So at best, the Kumaras are Jivan Mukta. They're qualified for liberation, but they're still dragging their karma around. Yeah?
The question is that one might argue, they are halfway merged in the existence of the Lord, they haven't got real experience of this merging, and then somebody offered them devotional service and they tell that it's better than the merging. So,
right, and so.
But it's like they didn't have full experience of this, so how can they judge?
They can judge now that they've experienced devotion, they can tell the difference. Even though they have not yet experienced complete merging, it's like, you can't do it anyway. There is no such thing as a living entity losing its identity. That's a fiction. They can forget their identity, pretend it's not there, but it's always there, their separate identity. Right? I mean, there's no absolute merging. There isn't such a thing. So of course they have an experience. There's no such thing. And the Mayavadis may argue that, you know, they've just been won over by the sentimental propaganda of the Vaishnavas, and they're, you know, unfortunately they're getting involved in duality. You can think like that, but that's wrong. That's deluded. Because this other ideal of absolute merging is a fiction. There is no such thing. Duality will always be there. You will always, no matter what you do, you'll always be a separate living entity. There's no way to undo that.
Can you say that there is nobody in the whole history of this universe and prior to this who really merged into the existence that who would tell us what it looks like? Can you say that there is no history?
Well, the thing is, devotees know what the absolute truth looks like, but they're maintaining their separate identities and they're experiencing Krishna. Okay, so they can tell what Krishna looks like, but if you merge into the absolute truth, then how can you do anything? You don't exist anymore. It's a separate entity. You don't have a mind, you don't have an ego, so how can you just, if you come down then, you know, and tell us what you experienced, that means you never really were completely liberated. If you're completely liberated, you'll never come down again. And you'll never say another word, you won't have a mouth to talk with. You won't have an identity to postulate. I saw this. There won't be any I left. There'll be no knowledge, there'll be pure jnana, but no word, no object of knowledge, and no process of knowledge. So on that level, there's nothing that can be said. So who's going to describe it? Even if they experience it, they can't come back and describe it to anybody. Yes?
So it doesn't mean that the only way for them to prove their theory is to try to find some quotes from the scriptures in support of their views?
Yes, they try to get the Upanishads to support the Advaita Vad view. That's the whole attempt of Shankaracharya's Vedanta commentary and every Mayavad book that's been written since then, to get support from the Upanishads for the idea of merging. But actually, it's impossible. There is no such thing as absolute merging.
So, it looks like our position, the Buddhist position, is much better because we can use the same shastras to prove that there is devotional service in this world. Is the higher goal?
Yes.
And at the same time, we can give experience or examples of those who serve Krishna and
yes.
What this looks like.
Yes, and the scriptures actually support us. We're actually presenting the real message of the Upanishads.
And they can give examples of the devotees who achieve the devotional service and then who can tell us what
yes. Yes. We have recorded examples, but someone who's skeptical could say, well, that's just made up stories, legends. It's even better if you have some living examples. Then people can't say it's a story. They have to deal with the person who's right in front of them, who's a pure devotee. Then they can offend him and say he's not a pure devotee, or he isn't what everyone claims he is, but at least they have a concrete example that they can't ignore. The best thing is if devotees become perfect, and then faithless people have to think seriously. Yeah, you had something?
Regarding Sarvagyanpur's question, this means that since nobody experienced the ananda of Brahman, to explain that, logically, one may say that because The Sukadeva Goswami, an ideal example, they are not achieved the complete marriage. So they probably left the process in between before achieving perfection.
Well, yes, there's no absolute merging, but there is something that's called Brahman realization. In the beginning of this Bhagavad Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami was talking about people who theoretically, or even with full realization, realize that partial manifestation, Brahman, the impersonal. He's not saying that nobody does it. He talks about those who do it. There's no absolute merging, but there can be Brahman realization and the bliss derived from that realization. Because the Brahman is a real, Brahman, the impersonal supreme, is a real aspect of Krishna. But they don't merge. You can have ecstasy, you can have realization. I don't know what you actually see, because there's not supposed to be any form. But the fact is, Krishna does have a form. So they're seeing Krishna, but very, very out of focus, like looking at a mountain from a great distance. You can't distinguish any form, but it has a form. Even if it's just a blob, that blob is a form. So there is no formless perception, but Krishna perceived out of focus seems to be formless, and they call it Brahman. But it's not separate from Krishna, and it's not really impersonal. Because if it's just a light, it's his light, it's his effulgence. There's no absolute impersonality, because everything is coming from the Supreme Person. And there's no question of absolutely merging into that Supreme. Because we are separate parts and parcels and will always be. But still, you can have an experience that from your point of view is impersonal because you can't understand the personal side of it. So what you see, your experience may be impersonal. And you can call that, and you get some pleasure from it, you can call that Brahmananda. It's a real experience, but it's a out of focus, partial experience of the Supreme.
Yes, if this argument is taken, then since nobody can explain what is Brahmananda, because they don't have ego there, so how can you practically say that the bliss in the spiritual world is there? Can you also say that?
No, there is some description of Brahmananda. It's a vague description, but the Upanishads say something about Brahmananda, and there's personal testimony from those who think they've experienced it. People do say things about it, even though theoretically it should be indescribable. But it isn't, because it isn't really empty, it isn't really completely formless. It's impersonal because we don't recognize the personality, but the personality and the qualities are there. Whatever the Upanishads say about the Absolute Truth, it's a description of its qualities. Even the negative terms, like it's invisible. Well, being invisible is real potency. If I was invisible, I could, walk around and steal things and nobody would catch me. It's an actual power. So the Absolute Truth has powers that are described, capacities that are described in the Upanishads. And everything the Upanishad says about the Absolute Truth is describing qualities. That's okay, because the Absolute Truth does have qualities. But you can say it has no qualities, and you could not focus on the qualities and just see the oneness. Because in a sense, the Absolute Truth is everything. Everything comes in the Absolute Truth. But in another sense, it's different. So you can look, you can turn your attention to the sameness and ignore the difference, and call that Brahman realization. And then you can describe it. But as soon as you start describing it, you're actually admitting that it has qualities as soon as you say anything.
So can we also say that the devotees pray that the bliss of Brahman effulgence is a drop compared to the Brahman?
Yes. They don't say that there's no such thing. They just say it's very inferior.
Can we say that the devotees also know or experience the pleasure of Brahmananda, which is included in devotional service?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
that's described in the 14th chapter of the Gita. Buddhya Vishuddhaya Yukto Dvidyatmanam Niyamyacha, and the three verses following that. Purifying your intelligence with firm determination, tolerating all dualities, you become Brahma-Buddha. That means you have Brahman experience. It's part of the development of devotional service. Before you get attraction to Krishna, you become liberated. And you can taste the bliss of Brahman. It's a preliminary stage. It's like, it's like sugar is one of the ingredients of ice cream. So you can, you're not supposed to before you offer it. You can taste the sugar before you make sure it's not salt that you're adding to the ice cream. You can taste the sugar, the ingredient, before the final preparation is finished. Like that, you can taste the bliss of Brahman because it's one of the components of prema. It's like the sugar that's the basis of the candy, but then all different flavors are added to it.
If the Mayavadi says that unless somebody goes to the Brahman and falls down and takes the devotional service, then you can consider the devotional service as positive attraction, then Brahmananda, how can you answer this question?
Why do they say that? They say that you have to fall down.
You mentioned that Mayavadi is considered unless you are out of the body, still you are dragging the karma around, you are not really liberated.
You haven't fully achieved liberation as long as you still have a body, yes.
So they may argue that Sudeva Goswami, whatever example we give, they have not left their body and went there and experienced and came down. So
they became degraded by becoming devotees. They could have become liberated and they lost the chance by getting attracted to the Supreme. It's okay for ignorant people to worship God. That's good for them, it's for their elevation. When a self-realized soul starts worshipping God, that's a fall down, as far as the Advaitavadis are concerned.
No point in arguing with them. So you cannot argue with them.
Except for that their basic ideas are wrong. You have to attack the basic ideas. Their conclusions follow from their premises. It's the premises that are wrong.
Or is there any example that somebody attend Brahma Jyoti, experience Ananda, falls down, take a devotional service?
We would say, why does he leave it? Why does he give it up for something else if it's the best thing? And if he's fully satisfied with it? And if he's not even, once he attains it, he's not a separate individual. How did he come back to being a separate individual when that individuality was dissolved? How did he come back? That means it never was dissolved. It means they never were fully satisfied because they're looking for something else. You may argue that there's something else, it's a mistake, something else is not better. But why did they give up Brahmananda for Bhaktiananda? Why? Why did they give it up? You can argue that Bhaktiananda isn't really better, but why did they give up the Brahmananda if it's the best? Yes, sorry, you know.
So the first time that it might improve their theory that, okay, we have such a nice process, we follow this, we emerge, and then because of emerging, we don't give up this emerging, it must be very, very nice, so it's better than you have to watch my experience.
Okay, show me one example. Who do you know who became completely emerged and never came back? Tell me his name. Swami so-and-so, but he's still here. I see his picture. Why didn't he disappear? Who actually did ever become completely merged into Brahman and never, came back to do anything else? You can make up some myth if so-and-so did, but it's just, Brahma leaned this and that, Swami Ananda, but did he really do that? Or is he walking around as a pig somewhere in the gutter?
They might have been who came to us who really did, they won't speak about it. And
they're not there anymore.
Yes, they're not there anymore. They might have told it. Especially so nobody would see them.
Okay, well, can can you say against that? I mean, if you really believe that, go ahead. What can you say? You can believe that so many people merge into Brahman. That's just a belief. Because someone told you, but you don't really have proof of it. You have no evidence of it. We have evidence of devotees. At least if you, as a follower of Shankaracharya, accept the Shastras, at least you accept the Upanishads. Even if you don't accept the Puranas, okay, but even in the Upanishads, there are examples of pure devotees of the Supreme Lord who didn't disappear, who are still around. Yeah. And what they said and did is described even in the Upanishads. That's our evidence, is the testimony and the deeds and the instructions of pure devotees who did attain the bliss of devotional service. But what testimony or instructions do you have of those who are completely merged? They never told you anything. You never heard anything from them. So, you know, you shoot someone out in a rocket ship, and, you know, the rocket ship disappears, no trace of it. How do you know he got to any place? He's just gone. No trace of him.
But they just believe in those.
Yes?
That's the one who believes.
Yeah. And that liberated soul may be walking around as a cowboy road somewhere. You don't know. Yes, Greg. There is no.
There is no trace. He was successful. There is no trace of him.
Well, just because someone disappears doesn't mean he's perfected his life. It just means we don't know where he is.
Could we speak of merging as a soul that actually rests in Brahman and then it's either stuck there, I mean, remaining there or returning or.
Rest there permanently or temporarily?
By emerging, because it's not really that the individual is lost.
Well, that's what they think it is. Because there cannot remain any duality in perfection. This is basic Advaitavad.
That's there.
May be some other impersonalism, but the kind taught by Shankara, even the kind taught by the Buddhists, is that individuality has to be destroyed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're still living in duality.
That's what they say.
But yeah.
We refer to merging as.
What do we mean by merging? You mean sayujya?
Yeah, that the soul actually rests in.
Okay. Well, one idea is just merging physically into the body of God. Mm-hmm. That instead of taking up residence somewhere in the spiritual sky, you actually become something inside, a particle of dust or some of Krishna's feet, or corpuscle in his blood or something. You actually enter his body, become part of his body. That's one idea of how the Vaishnavas understand Sayujya. There's another idea given by Ramanuja Acharya, if I can remember it. No, it's the same thing, merging, actually physically merging into God's body. That's how we can understand it. Now we see, Shishupal did that. Maybe he didn't stay there forever, but everybody saw him merge into the body of Krishna. Typos in the file, I should fix them right now.
Yeah, okay.
The corrections can be forgotten.
The second line of the translation.
21.
Yeah, what we just read. It says, for us who, I mean, the end of the verse.
For us who only desire devotional. No?
Yes, it says devotion service.
Yep, devotional. Okay, I fixed it. See, now it's fixed.
Okay.
Otherwise. It may slip by, better to catch it right now.
Okay, so to mention.
Yeah.
And I just want to ask a question, how do we construe, understand, for those who have no realization of the self, from
anatma.
How do we understand that exactly in terms of translating that?
Well, anatma. it's the term is there. It's also there in the Upanishads. We have to, some puzzle to figure out what to make of it. An atma can mean what is not the self, dead matter. But here we're talking about conscious, plural, persons, people who are an atma. So a person cannot be dead matter. We have to take an atma to mean something else. Then you have to make it above free, because it doesn't make sense literally. They are atma. There's no way a person is not atma. So he's atma, but he doesn't have atma. Well, what does it mean he doesn't have atma? He is atma. Okay, he doesn't have understanding of atma. You have to stretch it to get to a point that it makes sense. You can't, the literal meaning and the second attempt don't fit. So then you make a third attempt. Okay, he doesn't understand atma. That makes sense. You have to stretch it with figurative meaning that far to get to something that fits. So, and then Jiva Goswami says, Atmanastava ekanta bhakti raitana. He says in his words that it's people who are devoid of devotion, exclusive devotion to you. That was my liberty to translate it as those who have no realization of the self. That's my, I had to say something for an atma. What does it say in the translation? Prabhupada's translation, let's see. 50. Anatmana, of those who are less intelligent, Prabhupada says less intelligent persons, which is another good idea. Atma means intelligence, or don't have intelligence. Am I taking too much? I don't think I'm taking too much liberty here by translating it as those who have no realization of the self. It's one feasible interpretation.
Oh yeah, I mean.
The only thing is, I should be just translating, not giving a second commentary in the middle of his commentary. But I had to do something here.
Actually, it's very valuable because you can see that it kind of the
well. The connection between the two ideas.
It seems clear. I mean, it just looks like a linear.
Okay. Yeah, but it's taking a little bit of liberty. I'm injecting my own interpretation on an atma. But usually that or it'd have to be something awkward and not very understandable. Okay, anything else? Can we move on to 22? Okay, now he further paraphrases that statement. Atraitat uktam bhavati. What they meant by this is as follows, what the Kumaras meant by that last, their very last statement. It's the end of their prayer. Okay. Ete brahmavidya siddhanam paravara guru nam api guravaha. These sages are, so it's not what's meant by what they said. Well, let's see. These sages are the spiritual masters, perfect in mystic knowledge of Brahman, even of all other spiritual masters, greater and lesser, four Kumaras. But it's not what they meant. This is what who meant. Let's see, who's talking then? Not them. No, what Shukadeva meant. I'm sorry, who's speaking? Brahma?
Yes,
Brahma.
Well, Brahma, he's speaking in the very first verse of the prayer, which he said, they went to the spot on those that eat salt for by the recognizes and great sages.
That's going to be mentioned right now. Ata eva, therefore it was said, Paramahamsa Mahamuninam, that these four Kumaras were the great sages who were Paramahamsas. Yes, but Jiva Goswami says here that by this it is said that that they're gurus, even of the supreme gurus who are perfect in knowledge of Brahma. Okay, I'm just trying to, there's a fault in my translation. I said what they meant, what the Kumaras meant, but it's not the Kumaras talking, it's Brahma talking about the Kumaras here.
Did you say what meant?
Sorry?
What meant?
Well, that's sort of avoiding the issue. it's really just, I try, here this is, here the following is said. But the thing is, if something's said, someone must be saying it.
Yeah.
You're making it impersonal, it's avoiding. You know, because then the reader doesn't know what statement, whose statement about what. So I think we're confused now. What statement are we talking about? Yeah, well, here the following is said. Well, where? There's a statement. Things are said in statements. So where? Which statement are we talking about? The problem is the last thing we just discussed was the last verse spoken by the Kumaras. The only other thing that was said after that was Jiva Goswami's own comment. Maybe Jiva Goswami is commenting in his own comment, because there's no statement by Brahma here. It's Kumaras talking. And so it's not what Brahma meant by what the Kumaras said. Maybe it's what Jiva Goswami meant, what I, Jiva Goswami, meant in my interpretation of what the Kumaras said. Yes.
Before that it was said that the devotee's intention is superior to the to that of the Brahmacharis or Vaishnavas. And then Kumaras, they started when required devotees. And then it looks like that because in the very first verse it was said that Lord went to the spot and his lotus feet are glorified by the Brahmacharis, and great sages are glorified.
So they're glorifying, therefore they're great sages?
Great sages, those not Kumaras, but another great sages, devotees are always glorifying the Lotus Feet.
Well, yeah, but what are we, but it says these ones are, which ones? We're talking about not just about sages in general, but about sages who are the gurus of all the sages. And then Paramahamsa Mahamuni, that was in specific reference to the Kumaras. So we're talking about the Kumaras here, not just about any sages. This is in specific reference to the Kumaras. Yes?
But can it be referenced not to Kumaras, but to the devotees? Because in one of the previous verses they said that they are somehow, that they appreciate.
You mean these means devotees in general?
Just devotees in general, yeah. Not Kumaras.
Okay, I'm going to make a note of this to ask, because I put sages in brackets. Notice it's just ate. Jiva Goswami does this a lot. He uses pronouns and leaves it to you to figure out what the antecedent is. Sometimes he'll have five pronouns in one sentence, and you have to puzzle over. You know, he's not writing for sissies, for amateurs. He expects the reader to be able to identify all the antecedents. Sometimes I get confused over this. So maybe sages here is not the right idea. Or devotees rather than sages?
There is one commentary saying all the sages pray with pity for Christ.
Where's that? Of the
78.20. The translation quotes a verse. Let us reside in various hells, but there is something even worse. We have no fear of these hells, but there is none that suffer. So these are the four Kumaras.
Four Kumaras talking, yes.
Yeah, and they're referred to as the sages.
Right, but that's just sages. Here we're talking about gurus of all the gurus. That's something more, you know, that's not just sages. But devotees in general are not Paramahamsa Mahamuni. No, that's specifically Kumaras. If we're talking about devotees in general, why quote this Paramahamsa Mahamuni?
Said not about it was said the just when the Kumaras just got darshan, you know, so that time they weren't yet devotees, they didn't become devotees.
Yeah.
And there were it's mentioned of some other devotees who are always going to
be. Yeah, maybe, but the rest of this paragraph, which we haven't read yet, all these quotes are all about the Kumaras specifically. So that cinches it. The discussion here is not about devotees in general, about the Kumaras. Because we have four quotes, four, five, each one of them is specifically about the Kumaras.
So one option is that he's explaining himself, that he's just...
Who's he?
Jiva.
I think so. Because unless the Kumaras are calling them, are talking about themselves, which are sort of, but they're not talking about themselves as the gurus of all the gurus, not saying about themselves. So Jiva Goswami is referring back to what he meant by what he said in the previous paragraph, I think. Anyway, let's read these quotes. So therefore, thus the words of the great sages among the Paramahamsas were spoken. That was spoken about the four Kumaras by Brahma, right? Yeah, it was. And then there are other statements. Tam tvam aham jnana ganam sobhava pradvasta maya guna beda mohai sanandana jyair riddhi sambhibhavyam iti shrimad amshumad vakyadam. Can we have first references on this? Number 27, which one? Can I read the translation before we get into the discussion of it? Anyway, Amshaman says, O my Lord, sages freed, it must be ninth canto. It's somewhere in the first volume of the ninth canto. O my Lord, sages freed from the influence of the three modes of material nature, sages such as Sanatana and his brothers are able to think of you who are concentrated in knowledge. Okay. Now, do you remember we have a comment?
Yeah, I just read that. It says, thus the words of the great sages among the Paramahamsas were spoken. So maybe this sentence is the previous two lines explain less than the conclusion. Maybe these are the words that he's referred to, but what meant.
I'm sorry, last two lines where?
In the translation of
78.22. You mean the beginning of it?
Yeah, the beginning.
That's about four Kumaras.
Yeah, so we like there was a question, who's speaking?
And who's
meant by this is as follows. But then they say that's the words of the great sages and all the Paramahamsas were spoken. So these are the words, so whoever speaks them.
Well, that was Brahma, but it was Brahma all the way back.
That's another option.
That's an option. I can consider it.
Okay.
Just, yeah. I'm just leaving these questions here for me to consider later here. Okay. Anyway, we have Amshaman's statement, and then two other statements. Ihatma tatvam samya jagada munayo yadachakshat atman iti brahma vakyata. And the statement of Lord Brahma, the Kumara brothers explain the facts of the self so nicely in this world that the truth at once became clearly perceived by the sages. And what's the first reference for that?
It's 2.7.5.
Ah, okay. 2.7.5? Okay. Can't be.
That's the next one.
2.7.5 is not that. Oh, yes, it is. It is. Top dum tapo vivida lokta. Yeah. How do you like that? It's Brahma's description of the Leela avatars, and he's describing the four Kumaras. I'll read you the verse. The whole verse. Probably in the commentary. Anyway, it's Brahma describing the four Kumaras as Shakyavesha avatars.
So he's the speaker. So.
No, Brahma's the speaker of this one quote.
Okay.
Brahma Vakyato. And this was spoken by Brahma, this quote.
Yes.
And then
yeah, one more quote. Tasmai meditakashayaya tamasakparam darshayati bhagavan samat kumaraha. That's from Shruti. What Shruti? 20?
Chandogya
Upanishad. Okay, so Sanat Kumara is glorified as Bhagavan there in the Chandogya Upanishad. Ityadi Shrutau cha tata prasidam. So the Kumaras are famous as the gurus of all the gurus from all these statements, including from the Chandogya Upanishad. Such words of Shruti as, to him who had overcome all contamination, godly Sanat Kumara revealed the reality beyond darkness. Let's see. Okay, yes, we can read the commentary, but you want to wait? You want to ask a question first?
It looks like that the Kumaras would be Paramahamsa Mahamuni, because at that point they already had a strong desire to see. Maybe you remember this explanation of Shridhar Swami, that the writer he went on foot in order to show his lotus feet because they wanted to see.
So, yes.
And it looks like that they were the Paramahamsa Mahamuni.
Yes, it is definitely the Kumaras. Definitely. That's the words were spoken about the Kumaras. And they were gurus of all the gurus among the impersonalists. They weren't devotees yet. They were the best of impersonalists, in other words. Okay, maybe that's the point. That they were the best of all impersonalists, and still they're offering obeisances. They're surrendering to the Lord. Atmaramas Chamunayo. Even the Atmaramas, and they were definitely best of Atmaramas, just like Shukadeva was. And they were so attractive because Krishna has such wonderful qualities. Which is really what we're talking about. That's the topic under discussion, is the transcendental nature of Krishna's qualities, and of his abode, and of his devotees. Here's the commentary. Amshuman was looking far and wide for the missing sacrificial horse of his grandfather, Maharaj Sagara. He came upon the Supreme Lord's avatar, Kapiladeva, at his ashram, and offered him the prayers that include the words cited here. In the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma described to his son Narada the appearance of the four Kumaras as Shaktiyavesh avatars of the Lord, finite souls embodying some special power of the Supreme, which in their case was the power of yoga discipline. They lived on the second highest planet of the material universe, Tapoloka, and most other sages honor them as their spiritual masters. One of the four, Sanat Kumara, is said in the Chandogya Upanishad to have given enlightenment to blank. I don't know who, I have to find it in the Chandogya Upanishad. Although, is it verse references there? Okay, could someone take this as a homework assignment?
Yeah.
Find out who he's talking to?
Sure.
We have the edition upstairs.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we can clear this up. Okay, any questions? One or two questions? Then we have to stop. Or no questions? Okay, yes.
I really tempted to ask about Kapila that, but I'll save it for tomorrow because we don't.
Okay, remember your question. We'll do it tomorrow. Go ahead.
If you have extra time, I just want to conclude on that same topic.
And we don't really have extra time, we're over time. But, so. Hold on to it, we'll discuss it tomorrow. We'll remind me, we'll discuss these questions before we start everything else tomorrow, before we continue.
Short about
yeah.
Kumaras. So they were Paramahamsa Mahamunina, it doesn't mean that they were already devoted then after this national.
No, we understand that.
They became even better devotees.
No, I think we take it to mean that they were the best of impersonalists. That seems to fit the context. The previous sentence is talking about that the gurus of the gurus among those who have a knowledge of Brahma. Not among those who have love for Krishna.
But at the same time, it is said that Paramahamsa Mahamuni, that they are explain it so more by the recognizes and great sages that this great sages they are anxious to receive the Holy Spirit. So how can we?
I'm sorry. What's how? Where's that said?
So it looks like the Brahman somehow means it's
means devotees.
Yes, because they are
honored by great sages?
Okay, maybe
not necessarily, yeah, I think in that context, no, that they haven't really become devotees yet. I mean, we can further discuss this if you want to, tomorrow we can continue that. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Hare
Thank you.